Good morning. It's time to read the Mason City Globe Gazette for Tuesday, November 26th. I'm Barb, and my partner here at the microphone for the next hour is Sharon. And we are pleased to be with you. This broadcast is made possible through a partnership between the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service and 97.9 FM KCMR Radio. Here are the headlines on the front of the Mason City Globe Gazette. Winter weather watch to take effect tonight. Ribbon cutting set for Mason City area. A fan favorite in restoring tractors. And the Christmas Cheer Fund kicks off. Well, the weather today will be cloudy and colder and becoming breezy with snow arriving. Snow along with blizzard conditions into tonight. Travel will become extremely poor and dangerous. Snow will continue into tomorrow morning, bringing a total of 4 to 8 inches. A few spots could approach a foot. More snow arriving on Thursday. And it looks like the high today should be 39, overnight 29. Wednesday's high would be 31. On Thursday, there'll be a bit of snow in the afternoon. That'll be Thanksgiving Day. A high of 30 degrees. And on Friday, a bit of ice, then rain and wind with a high of 35. And on Saturday, a bit of snow and rain with a high of 39. Now, for our first story, here's Sharon.
Good morning. The first article here is entitled "The Fan Favorite in Restoring Tractors," and there's a real very large picture here of a green John Deere tractor, and it's Northwood Kensett High School junior and an FFA student, Ryder Lester, stands next to his restored 1972 John Deere tractor. A North Iowa student made it all the way to Nationals for a tractor restoration competition on his first year in restoring a tractor. Although he didn't place, he did win the fan favorite award. The Future Farmers of America student at Northwood Kensett Junior and Senior High School had competed at a national level in a tractor restoration competition as one of the 12 top competitors in the country. Junior Ryder Lestrude said he didn't expect to qualify for the national level of the Chevron Delo tractor restoration competition, which was his goal, and now he aims a little higher in future competitions and to do well at the state fair. "Maybe I'll take home third or second or first place," Lestrude said. "I just want to place somewhere next year." The Chevron Delo tractor restoration competition started in the 1990s to recognize and reward the creativity, technical aptitude, and business knowledge of high school age students from around the country, according to the Chevron Lubricants website. Additionally, they hand out prizes for the top competitors in the FFA for tractors and agricultural mechanics to get more involved, Lestrude said. He said he wanted to do the project because he's always been into mechanics, especially since his father is a diesel mechanic with more friends who are mechanics. "I wanted to get more into classic cars and motorcycles, but also kind of looking at tractors and stuff," Lestrude said. A family friend and Lestrude's mentor, Jamie Lucasson, gave him a 1972 John Deere 4020 high crop tractor from Louisiana, of which only 36 were built, to restore since he owns a restoration store in the area, Lestrude said. "He never has time to restore his own tractors, and I was kind of looking for an FFA project to do," he said. One big aspect of restoring a tractor is finding the parts and therefore donors and money to get them to restore the tractor. Lestrade said Titan Tire gives out free tires for tractor restorations for the Iowa State Fair, but his tractor was 2 years too new for Titan's requirements. So instead, he spent about a month contacting different tire companies from around the world and came to Continental Agricultural Tires to donate some tires to him. They just brought back their line back to the United States last year while I was restoring it. So they were like, yeah, we'll send you tires if you promote us. So I'm kind of their promoter in our area for the Continental Ag Tires, Lestrade said. Besides the roughly $4,000 in sponsorships and donations, Lestrade and Lucassen had to spend roughly $11,000 to completely restore the tractor, which Lestrade said needed a nut and bolt restoration other than the motor. I took it all down to the bare frame, he said. The only thing I didn't do was the inside of the motor, just because when I got it, it was supposed to have a fresh rebuild on it. His was a relatively cheap restoration in the competition, though, Lestrade said. He saw one restoration at the competition that had a total of $26,000 put into the tractor. Mary Cotter, the FFA advisor for Northwood Kensett High School, had to verify that the project was real, and Lestrade is a student of his to the businesses Lestrade asked for donations from, and said he was most impressed with the calls Lestrade made to get the donations he got. He's pretty persistent on that and talked to a lot of people to get those donations, Cutter said. I thought that was maybe as much of the learning process as any of it. Lestrade said it took about 9.5 months to complete, and though he was restoring the tractor for the Iowa State Fair initially, he missed the cutoff and so looked for another tractor restoration competition to participate in. When he looked up the Chevron Delo tractor restoration competition after seeing something on Facebook about it in the tractor groups he's a part of, Lestrade said he thought it would be fun to do. He then had to make a 100-page workbook about his restoration, made a 3 to 4 minute video, and have professional photos of before and after the restoration. The competition entry deadline was August 20th. On September 9th, he was notified that he was in the top 12 competitors, and on October 30th, the judging was held at the National FFA Conference in Indianapolis. During the judging, Lestrade said he had to give a 20-minute presentation showing the judges his restoration project, what all needed to be done, and how he went about doing it, after which there was a 10-minute question and answer session. During this process, the four judges look for safety, the participants' knowledge about the project, and how much of the work they did themselves, according to Lestrade. Since Lucassen specializes in the 4020 and the 4010 John Deere series, he and Lestrade were able to do nearly all the work in-house, only needing to send it off to test the ejectors, Lestrade said. On October 31st, during the banquet, the judges awarded best photo, best presentation, and then the top three finishers. Third place won $3,000, second place $5,000, and first place won $10,000. I didn't win any of that, but I got home and then I found out just a couple days ago that I won fan favorite, Lestrade said. Lestrade said all the FFA members voted at their booth to pick their favorite restoration, which he won by 20% of the votes. The award came with a $150 Visa gift card. He is starting another tractor restoration project, having started on a 1962 John Deere, a 4010 Standard from South Dakota, about 2 weeks ago, and said he hopes to have it completed in time to participate in the county fair as well as the state fair and the Chevron Delo tractor restoration competition again. When he talked to the judges for this year's competition, Lestrade said they gave him pointers on what to come back with next year, saying to become a winner, he needs to be a little more complex about it. My judges said, even though I didn't win, they said, you can't be upset because it's your first year ever restoring a tractor and you're in the top 12 of the nation for restoring tractors, Lestrade said.
Barb? The Christmas Cheer Fund kicks off. The Globe Gazette and you have been helping since 1927. This is an article by Jackie Smith. Since 1927, the Globe Gazette has been working to ensure that all North Iowans could have something extra at Christmas. Today in your Globe Gazette, you'll find your kickoff envelope for the 2019 Christmas Cheer Fund. We hope you'll give generously. It's tax deductible. In 1927, you gave $301.30. In the intervening years, that has grown to $114,181.03, which has helped 2,204 North Iowa households, as well as local homeless shelters, food banks, community kitchen, crisis intervention service, caring pregnancy service, and the Mason City Ministerial Association. The application for aid has already begun. You can apply at our office until December 16th. The Globe is open from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday, except this week when the office is closed for Thanksgiving on Wednesday afternoon through Friday. Our goal this year is $125,000 by Christmas, and we're confident by working together we'll achieve that goal. After all, our community is counting on us. We'll keep you updated online and in print with short profiles of those in need and where we are in our fundraising efforts. Give whatever you can, but please consider giving soon. Drop off your donations at the Globe Gazette, 300 North Washington Avenue in Mason City, or mail them to the Christmas Cheer Fund, Box 271, Mason City, Iowa, 50402-0271. We guarantee that your gift, no matter the size, will help someone in North Iowa have a better, brighter Christmas, just like every Christmas since the Cheer Fund's founding in 1927.
Sharon. Okay, the last article on the front page, ribbon cutting set for Mason City Arena. The date is set on Friday, December 13th, after nearly a full year of construction work, Mason City's long-promised multi-purpose arena will have its ribbon-cutting ceremony. The event scheduled for 10 a.m. at the arena's south entrance that leads up to the recently christened Mercy One Lobby, according to the official River City Renaissance Facebook page. Mason City broke ground on the arena back in February, and crews have been working on it ever since. But that work hasn't been without a few minor hiccups. In total, there was more than $1 million worth of change orders to address items such as uneven terrain for the floor and electrical issues. Such changes on works projects are not uncommon, though. Over 35% of all construction projects will have a major change order at some point during the process. While that work has neared completion, the arena's main tenant is still working on its portion of capital investment. About 2 months after its capital campaign kickoff, the Mason City Youth Hockey Association still needs to raise about $1.7 million in multi-year financial sponsorships. They were able to find a sponsor for Mezzanine Deck, one of the $100,000 per year items, but funding for the arena name, $1 million, the ice naming rights, $500,000, the training and shooting room, $100,000, and the Zamboni, $100,000, is still outstanding. Barb?
One person killed, four injured in a multi-vehicle crash over the weekend. This is by Lisa Gruet. A 16-year-old boy was killed in a four-vehicle crash on Saturday, November 23rd. The crash happened around 5:15 p.m. at the intersection of U.S. Highway 65 and County Road B-15, just north of Mason City. Iowa Department of Transportation says Colton Young, who was the driver of a 2002 Chevy Monte Carlo, died as a result of his injuries. The driver of a 2001 GMC Jimmy, George Baker, 56, and the driver of a 2016 Chevy Trax, Dan Waters, 43, along with Michelle Waters, 49, were all injured in the crash. Trenton Jensen, 15, was also reported injured at the scene. Driver and make and model information about the fourth vehicle has not been disclosed. The cause and circumstances of the accident have not been determined and are still under investigation. Mason City Fire Department, Sargota County Sheriff's Office, Manly Fire Department, Forest City Ambulance, Iowa State Patrol, and Mercy One Air Med all responded to the scene.
Sharon. Okay. The Winter Weather Watch takes effect starting tonight in North Iowa. You knew it was coming. It's the start of the holiday travel season. Therefore, it means a major storm will strike. The Des Moines office of the National Weather Service started sending out emails to North Iowa emergency management officials last week. Snow, imminent, travel impacted. And now here we are. By 6 p.m. Tuesday, much of north central Iowa will be under a winter storm warning until midday Wednesday, according to the NWS SITREP. Yes, that is really what they call it. Weather prognosticators are predicting 4 to 8 inches of snow for Mason City, Algona, Estherville, and Storm Lake. Farther west and south, accumulations dwindle to 1 to 2 inches as rain and warmer temperatures replace the snow. The peak of the storm, with its disruption to travel, should strike Mason City between 10 p.m. Tuesday and 4 a.m. Wednesday. Northwest winds will increase Tuesday night and into Wednesday morning with gusts up to 45 miles per hour, the NWS says. Blowing and drifting snow will drop visibility to less than a half a mile, especially on major roads like I-35, Highway 65, and U.S. Highway 218. High temperatures in the 40s in recent days will drop to 32 degrees on Wednesday, with lows in the teens. Snow and rain will be on the menu for most of the rest of the week as well. Travelers should bookmark Iowa DOT's 511 travel site before they hit the road at https://hb511ia.org.
Employees save a Mason City woman from falling victim to phone scam. The Mason City Police Department has issued a statement reminding residents to be vigilant of telephone scams. Older residents are particularly vulnerable to falling victim to these scams, and the reminder comes after an incident on Monday regarding an 82-year-old Mason City woman. Police say the woman attempted to purchase $500 gift cards from a local retailer. Employees at the store recognized the scam and intervened before the woman could complete the purchase and called the police. Officers waited with the woman at her home until the scammers called back. The area code used in this scam came back as a telephone number in Jamaica. Scammers often call with secretive or urgent requests and ultimately ask individuals to purchase one or more gift cards. Once the purchase is made, the victim is asked to read the card and the PIN number from the cards, which scammers use to drain the card's value, leaving the victim footing the bill for the card amount. Authorities remind the public that if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is, and to be sure to double-check with a trusted family member, personal banker, or law enforcement before giving any financial or personal information over the phone or in making any purchases.
Well, since we don't usually do our obituaries until 8:30, I think I'll go ahead with some sports articles. Mason City girls start season with win. Dietz scores 39 points, has 10 rebounds. The Mason City girls basketball team opened its season with a 22-point win over Ankeny on Friday as the Mohawks cruised to a 86-61 victory. Anna Dietz led the way for the Mohawks with a double-double at 39 points and 10 rebounds and was a perfect 7-for-7 from the free throw line. Jada Williams and Jada Whitner provided 16 and 15 points respectively. The Mohawks had 18 assists and 11 three-point shots in the game. Our defense improved throughout the game, but we need to improve on not fouling so much and taking care of the ball, head coach Kurt Clausen said. Overall, we were very pleased with our first game of the season. And then there is a small picture here showing Mason City senior Anna Dietz goes to the basket for a layup against Emmitsburg last week during a scrimmage in Mason City. Dietz led the Mohawks with 39 points and 10 rebounds Friday in the opening win against Ankeny.
Junior hockey. Well, we'll continue with sports. Junior hockey. North Iowa 5, Granite City 4, Granite City 4, North Iowa 1. The North Iowa Bulls split a two-game home series against Granite City over the weekend, winning the Friday match by a 5-4 score and falling on Saturday 4-1. In Game 1, the Bulls scored 3 goals in the first period, while the Lumberjacks answered back with 2. In the second period, both teams scored 2 more goals, leading to a 5-4 North Iowa lead. After a scoreless third period, the Bulls emerged with a 1-point win. In the second game, Nick Boland scored the only goal of the game for the Bulls in a 4-1 loss. The Bulls' record is now 17-3-1 on the whole season.
Okay. Well, on to some more sports. There's a large picture here of Iowa place kicker Keith Duncan celebrates with teammate Colton Rastetter after kicking a 45-yard field goal during the first half of an NCAA college football game against Illinois. And this was Saturday in Iowa City. And the headline is, Iowa had some good, bad, and ugly in win over Illinois. And then it's got five different point things, and it says the good, the bad, the ugly, the cool, the milestone. So from Iowa City, five things to think about following Iowa's 19-10 victory over Illinois on Saturday at Kinnick Stadium. The win keeps the Hawkeyes at 19th in this week's Associated Press poll, heading into Friday's 1:30 p.m. regular season final at Nebraska. Number one, the good. Iowa's defense continues to be the heart and soul of an 8-3 football team that was held eight opponents to its lowest point total of the season. One of the reasons Coach Kirk Ferentz was comfortable in sending Keith Duncan onto the field for a field goal to extend a 13-7 lead was that he believed the 16-7 margin would be enough for the Hawkeyes to win their home finale. Iowa is allowing 12.2 points per game, the lowest defensive average of any Hawkeye team since allowing 11.1 points per game in 1959. Saturday, Iowa gave up some yards, 336, but held Illinois to its lowest point total of the year, with interceptions by Michael Ajemudia and Matt Hankins, and a fumble forced by Christian Welch and recovered by Jack Corner. The Hawkeyes turned over an Illinois offense three times that had turned the ball over just twice in its previous four games combined. Iowa also matched Illinois six tackles for a loss and recorded three sacks. Number two, the bad. Iowa's ground game continues to spin its wheels. The Fighting Illini were successful in their objective of limiting the Hawkeyes' rushing attack, holding the Hawkeyes to 2.5 yards per carry, or about half of what Iowa's goal is set at for each game. Tyler Goodson led the Hawkeyes in rushing for the second straight week, but gained just 38 yards on 21 carries, and 10 of those yards came on Iowa's longest run of the day. Goodson's average of 1.8 yards per carry mirrored the issues the Hawkeyes had as they were held below 100 yards for second time in three games. Mekki Sargent and Torin Young didn't provide much help, combining for four carries and 13 yards. Nate Stanley was a bright spot, topping his previous career best by 2 yards with the 22 yards he gained on four rushes. Number three, the ugly. It was a record-setting day for Keith Duncan, whose four field goals allowed him to establish a Big Ten single-season record with 27 goals for the season. It marked the third time this season Duncan has kicked four field goals to provide Iowa with a difference-making effort, but he left Kinnick Stadium with some work to do. The junior who took the field with three missions and 26 tries missed a pair of field goals in a game for the first time this season. Duncan hit the left upright on a 46-yard attempt that would have extended a 7-0 lead in the first quarter, then missed from 47 yards late in the second quarter as Iowa attempted to extend a 10-7 lead. That didn't cost the Hawkeyes on Saturday, but given the fine line between wins and losses this season, six games decided by 6 points or less, every kick counts. Number four, the cool. There were a handful of senior day moments to pick away in the memory bank on Saturday. It extended beyond the rare display of emotion from quarterback Nate Stanley as he spoke following the game, saying, "I don't think I'd be the person I am today if I didn't come here. The coaches have shaped me into the person I am. And if was the sight of Coach Kirk Ferentz and his wife Mary greeting Devontae Young at midfield after the senior's parents were unable to attend. Like the other mothers, Mary France was wearing Young's jersey number 17 as he ran onto the field. She then accepted a flower from Young, gave him a hug before the Iowa coach gave him a handshake. Number 5, the milestone. Iowa coach Kirk Ferentz reached a career milestone on Saturday. The Hawkeye victory was his 96th against Big Ten competition during his 21 years as Iowa's coach, tying Ferentz with former Iowa coach Hayden Fry for the fourth spot on the Big Ten's allotment list. Barb?
We'll come back to sports, but now we'll move on to the obituaries for this day on Tuesday, November 26th. The obituaries, the first one is Carol Ann Barlow, Wilma K. Menschik, Carol Marie Welty, Stanley or Stan Darwin Fitz, Donald W. Hansen, Dwayne Allen Moe, Donald L. Bergen, and Imelda or Mo Mayer. And the first one will be Carol Ann Barlow, 77 of Bettendorf, Iowa, formerly of Mason City, passed away Wednesday, November 20th, at Clarissa C. Cook Hospice House with the devotion of her loving family. She had a positive and caring nature, and her happiest times were spent with family. Private family services will be held at a later date. Memorials in Carol's name may be made to the Genesis Foundation in care of the Clarissa C. Cook Hospice House, where she received excellent care. Carol was born in 1941 to Anthony or Tony and Martha Grandjeanet in Algona, Iowa. She graduated in 1959 from St. Cecilia's Academy in Algona, Iowa. Following graduation, she moved to Mason City, Iowa. She married the love of her life, Jerry Barlow, on November 7th, 1964. He preceded her in death on August 16th, 1992. Carol lived in Mason City for 55 years. She spent most of her working career at McGladrey's in Mason City, retiring as office manager. Her greatest joy was spending time with her grandchildren and supporting their achievements, big or small. She lived the last 4 years of her life in Bettendorf due to health issues, living within walking distance of those she loved the most. She enjoyed spending time outdoors, working in the yard, attending her grandchildren's many games and concerts, shopping, and taking trips to Florida to see her sister Mary Lou. She was always ready to laugh and have fun, even as she coped with advanced pulmonary disease in the last 5 years of her life. And condolences may be made to Carol's family by visiting her obituary at www.weertsfh.com.
Wilma K. Menschik. The memorial service for Wilma K. Menschik, 95, of Rochester, Minnesota, formerly a longtime Stuartville, Minnesota resident, will be at 11 a.m. on Saturday at the Evangel United Methodist Church with Reverend Susan O'Connell and Reverend Mark Ray Dar officiating. Mrs. Menschik died on Wednesday of natural causes at Homestead Assisted Living in Rochester, where she had been a resident since August of this year. Wilma Catherine Popen was born on June 19, 1924 in Mason City, Iowa, to William and Catherine Bruchert Popen. She grew up on the family farm, attended Mason City schools, graduated from Mason City High School in 1942. She attended Rochester Junior College, where she studied accounting. She was employed at First National Bank in Stuartville and as a secretary at the United Methodist Church in Stuartville. Wilma was married in 1965 at the Stuartville United Methodist Church to George R. Menschik. Following their marriage, the couple moved into Stuartville, where they raised their family and continued to make their home for 46 years. Wilma was a homemaker, and George was an employee of IBM in Rochester for over 30 years. George and Wilma took an IBM transfer to Rust College in Holly Springs, Mississippi from 1982 to 1984, and again from 1987 to 1990. Wilma was a volunteer at Rust College as a data entry clerk to the campus president during their years there. They moved to South Rochester in 2011, where they lived for 8 years before moving to Homestead Assisted Living. Wilma was a longtime member of the Stuartville United Methodist Church and was currently a member of Evangel Methodist Church in Rochester for the past 8 years. She was a volunteer with the Pink Ladies at the Rochester Methodist Hospital. Wilma was an avid gardener and, with George, enjoyed vegetable and flower gardening and also canned. She enjoyed quilting, crocheting, knitting, crafts, and playing the piano. Wilma loved time spent with family, especially with their grandsons and great-grandchildren. A time of visitation for family and friends will be from 9:30 to the time of the service at the church on Saturday morning. Burial and a commitment service will take place at 3:30 p.m. Saturday at Elmwood Cemetery in Mason City. The family suggests memorials to Doctors Without Borders. Arrangements are with Griffin Gray in Stuartville. Condolences and memories of Wilma are welcome at www.griffingray.com.
Carol Marie Welty, 75, of Clear Lake, died Sunday, November 24th at Mercy One North Iowa Medical Center in Mason City. A memorial service will be at 1:30 Saturday, November 30th at Ward Van Schlick Colonial Chapel, 101 North 4th Street in Clear Lake, with Pastor Linda Johnson Prestholt officiating. Interment will be at Uppsala Lutheran Church Cemetery in Richmond, Minnesota at a later date. Richwood, Minnesota at a later date. Visitation will take place for 2 hours prior to the service at the funeral home. Carol was born on June 17, 1944, the daughter of Arthur and Hannah Tong Schmidt in Detroit Lakes, Minnesota. She married Donald Porkchop Welty on January 25, 1974, in Detroit Lakes. After 44 years of marriage, he preceded her in death on June 15, 2018. Carol grew up and attended school in Detroit Lakes. She and Don owned and operated Costello Beach Resort at Cormorant Lake in Minnesota. They later moved to Clear Lake in 1981, where she eventually opened Carol's Lounge. She also held other various jobs, including cooking at Apple Valley Assisted Living and Country Meadows. Carol was a very social lady who was always full of humor. She enjoyed listening to music, dancing, gardening, craftwork, and cooking. Most of all, she loved spending time with her family, especially her grandchildren. She also liked entertaining all of her family and friends and hosting her annual family hog roast each year. Ward Van Schlick is a Colonial Chapel in Clear Lake. Is in charge of the arrangements. The phone number is 641-357-2193, or you can visit colonialchapels.com.
Stanley Stan Darwin Fitz, 90, of Rockford, Iowa, passed away peacefully in his home on Saturday. A visitation will be held on Tuesday from 5 to 7 at Zion Lutheran Church in Rockford. A funeral service will be held at 10:30 with a 1 hour prior visitation on Wednesday at the church with Reverend Robert Schuer officiating. Burial will follow at Riverside Cemetery in Rockford. Stan was born on October 7, 1929, in Rowan, Iowa, to Dean Reading Fitz and Ida Caroline Olerking Fitz. He was raised and attended school in Rowan. After graduation, Stan enlisted in the United States Army as a military policeman and served during the Korean War. He was later honorably discharged in 1954. He was united in marriage to the love of his life, Corliss Marie Quinslan Fitz. Stan and Corliss moved to Rockford after Stan enrolled at Hamilton Business School in Mason City. After obtaining his degree, he began working for First State Bank in Rockford, which he later purchased the majority shares and became president. Stan was very involved in the Rockford community, both through the banks and community events and many other programs. Stan earned his Master Gardener certificate through Iowa State University Extension and was extremely proud of his garden named the Fitz Reading Garden, which attracted over 2,000 tourists annually. There have been many articles and publications surrounding his beautiful garden, which consisted mostly of flowers, but some vegetables, including 18 tomato plants he had last year. Stan also enjoyed woodworking in his earlier years and did anything and everything from remodeling homes to more intricate woodworking, such as constructing cutting boards, butcher blocks, and duck carving. And he was a longtime member of Zion Lutheran Church and also a member of the American Legion and Masonic Lodge. Memorials may be directed to the Rockford's Fossil and Prairie Center, which Stan helped establish and was very fond of. And Fullerton Schoenberg Funeral Home and Cremation Services in Rockford is in charge of arrangements.
Donald W. Hansen, 68, of North Springs, died Saturday, November 23rd, at Mercy One North Iowa in Mason City. Funeral service will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Saturday, November 30th, at Sheckler Colonial Chapels, 114 North Hawkeye Avenue in North Springs, with the Reverend Ross Erickson officiating. Burial will follow in Park Cemetery, North Springs. Visitation with public viewing will be held Friday evening, November 29th, from 4 to 7 at Sheckler Colonial Chapel, and will continue 1 hour prior to dawn service at the funeral home on Saturday. In lieu of flowers and customary remembrances, memorials may be left in Don's name to the Iowa Donor Network or NephCure Kidney International. Sheckler Colonial Chapel in North Springs is in charge, 641-749-2210.
Dwayne Allen Moe, 79, of Forest City, passed away Sunday at the Faith Lutheran Home in Osage, Iowa. Funeral services will be at 1:30 Wednesday at Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Forest City, with Pastor Rod Hopp officiating. Visitation will be 5 to 7 Tuesday at Middlestead Funeral Home in Lake Mills, and again 1 hour prior to the service at the church. Interment will take place at a later date. You may contact the family with online condolences at www.middlestadfuneralhome.com.
Donald L. Bergen, age 97, died on Saturday, November 23rd, at the Lutheran Retirement Home in Northwood, Iowa. Funeral services will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Friday, November 29th at Bethel Lutheran Brethren Church, 3906 Bluebell Avenue, Joyce, Iowa, with Pastor Kevin Olson officiating. Burial will take place in the Salem Lutheran Cemetery at Lake Mills. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to the service at the church on Friday. You can contact the family with online condolences at www.middlestadtfuneralhome.com or by calling 641-592-0221.
Imelda Mull Mayer, age 92, of Stacyville, passed away Saturday at her home in Stacyville. A funeral mass will be held at 10:30 Wednesday at the Visitation Catholic Church in Stacyville, Iowa, with Father Raymond Burkle officiating. Burial will be at Visitation Catholic Cemetery, and visitation will be from 4 to 6 p.m. Tuesday at Visitation Catholic Church in Stacyville with a rosary at 4:15. www.championbuhutfuneralhome.com. Champion Buhut Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. Barb?
Well, we had the Iowa Hawkeyes in sports. We're going to finish with our Iowa State defense steps up late when needed. The solid fourth quarter play staves off Kansas upset bid. Iowa State defensive coordinator John Heacock's mantra is to show up when the team needs you the most. The defense did that on Saturday as number 22 Iowa State beat Kansas 41-31. While the defense was subpar most of the afternoon, surrendering 493 total yards, 328 through the air, and 165 on the ground, it did come up big in the fourth quarter. Kansas had the ball with 5 minutes left in the game, and on the fourth down, the Jayhawks decided to go for it to keep its possession alive. Iowa State sophomore cornerback Anthony Johnson read the play perfectly and broke up the potential first down play on fourth and fifth. It was fourth and short, and I knew all game on third and short that they were going to the sticks, Johnson said. I knew it was going to be a hitch or a slant. It was a slant, and Johnson broke on the ball and got his hand on the ball to deflect it down. It's something he's been doing more and more of coach doing. It's something that he has been doing more and more of, Coach Matt Campbell said. Anthony made the great pass breakup on the ball, Campbell said. Anthony Johnson's growth from game one to where he's at now is incredible. It doesn't surprise me that he makes an incredible play. Now he's breaking on balls, and Tyvon Kyle is doing some of that at times, too. Two plays before that, Johnson broke up another pass to force a third down. This time, he was coming off the edge on a cornerback blitz. I knew from watching film that once I blitz, the receiver would stop his route, and the quarterback would try to get it out fast, Johnson said. I was able to make the play. Johnson batted the ball up in the air, and Orion Vance was nearly able to dive and intercept it. But outside the fourth quarter, Iowa State's defense played poorly. The Cyclones let Kansas running back Puka Williams to rush for 154 yards. Five Kansas receivers had at least 50 yards. What do we not do? We don't usually give up big plays, Campbell said. And you know what we did Saturday? We gave up big plays. Whether it was the first half or the second half of the ball game, they were abundant, and we're going to have to figure out why that happened. Big plays have plagued Iowa State in recent weeks. Oklahoma State had three plays of at least 50 yards. Oklahoma running back Kennedy Brooks had a 48-yard run against Iowa State, and Oklahoma receiver CeeDee Lamb had a 63-yard reception. The Cyclones need to clean up the big plays. We still haven't played our best football and a full four quarters, Johnson said. We do have room for improvement.
Okay, the last, I think this was the last article here, and it's from Florida, Newport Richey, Florida. And the title here is Florida School Finds Alternative for Frog Dissections. No frogs were harmed in the making of a Florida high school science class. J.W. Mitchell High School in Newport Richey began using synthetic frogs for educational dissection last Wednesday. Pasco County Superintendent Kurt Browning says it's the first school in the world to use the technology. The lives of real frogs are being spared at a cost of $150 per synthetic frog. Tampa-based developer Sin Daver received funds from People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals to help create the Sin Frog. Sin Daver says the fake frogs are made of water, fibers, and salts and can be reused. Founder and CEO Dr. Christopher Scalz says that synthetic frogs are also safer because there are no potentially harmful chemicals. PETA says 3 million frogs are killed for classrooms use each year.
What is next? We'll finish with looking back. Today is Tuesday, November 26th, the 330th day of 2019. There are 35 days left in the year. Boy, that's not many. Today's highlight in history, on November 26, 2000, Florida Secretary of State Katherine Harris certified George W. Bush the winner over Al Gore in the state's presidential balloting by a 537-vote margin. And on this date in 1789, Americans observed a day of Thanksgiving set aside by President George Washington to mark the adoption of the Constitution of the United States. In 1842, the founders of the University of Notre Dame arrived at the school's present-day site near South Bend, Indiana. In 1883, former slave and abolitionist Sojourner Truth died at Battle Creek, Michigan. In 1941, the U.S. Secretary of State, Cordell Hull, delivered a note to Japan's ambassador to the United States, setting forth U.S. demands for lasting and extensive peace throughout the Pacific area. The same day, a Japanese naval task force consisting of 6 aircraft carriers left the Kuril Islands and headed toward Hawaii. In 1942, Warner Brothers' motion picture Casablanca, starring Humphrey Bogart and Ingrid Bergman, had its world premiere at the Hollywood Theater in New York. In 1943, during World War II, the HMT Rona, a British transport ship carrying American soldiers, was hit by a German missile off Algeria. 1,138 men were killed. In 1950, China entered a Korean War, launching the counteroffensive against soldiers from the United Nations, the U.S., and South Korea. In 1973, President Richard Nixon's personal secretary, Mary Rose Woods, told a federal court that she'd accidentally caused part of the 18-and-a-half-minute gap in a key Watergate tape. In 1986, President Ronald Reagan appointed a commission headed by former Senator John Tower to investigate his National Security Council staff in the wake of the Iran-Contra affair. In 2007, Vice President Dick Cheney experienced an irregular heartbeat and was taken to George Washington University Hospital for evaluation. In 2008, teams of heavily armed guardmen, allegedly from Pakistan, stormed luxury hotels, a popular resort, a popular tourist attraction, and a crowded train station in Mumbai, India, leaving at least 166 people dead and a rampage that lasted some 60 hours. And that ends our today looking back.
All right. So that brings us to the end of the reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for Tuesday, November 26th. Your readers have been Barb and Sharon. This broadcast has come to you through a partnership between the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service and 97.9 FM KCMR Radio. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of IRIS or KCMR. Thank you for listening and stay tuned for today's reading of the Des Moines Register. You are listening to IRIS, your 24-hour radio reading service. Have a great day.